Well, it's been a while since I've heard Sukiyaku by Kayu Sakamoto. Do you remember when it came out, Graham?
Well, I did say possibly the 60s. And you thought maybe a bit later, but we checked it, 62.
It's just...
And I said to you, I reckon Lionel Rose made a version of this in English.
I don't remember that.
Well, I'm going to chase it up. We'll play it next week, if all of you boxing fans...
Anyway, it's a nice lead into our story about Japan. Ian Jarrett is our West Australian correspondent who's recently been on assignment in Bali and Japan, only to face two natural disasters, an earthquake in Japan and the eruption of Mount Agung in Bali. Fortunately, he escaped to tell the tale and he talks to Graham Kemlow about these experiences.
Ian, welcome back to the show. Lovely to hear from you, mate. You've just come back from... a couple of trips abroad, and I think you dodged a bullet in both places, didn't you? You're in Tokyo and then you're in Bali.
That's quite right, Graham. In Japan, we struck a bit of the earthquake that hit Osaka, and then less than a week later, I was in Bali when the volcano decided to have another little eruption. But luckily, I think we got the first flight out when flights were restored from Denpasar Airport.
Where are you going next? I think I'll keep away from it.
No plans at the moment.
No, well, that's good. So tell us about your trip to Tokyo. That was a vacation trip for you. Had you been there before?
I'd been to other parts of Japan before, but not really explored Tokyo and Kyoto. And we also went to Kanazawa, which is another really nice city to look around.
Okay, I haven't heard of that. How did you get around? I assume you flew into Tokyo, right?
Yeah, we actually bought rail passes which allowed us to explore different cities and experiences on the bullet trains, which are really something special. I just love to stand on the railway station at Japanese in Japan and watch the ritual of the bullet train staff, the carriage cleaners who bow as the train comes in and scoot on the train, do a very quick clean, jump off the train and bow to the train as it departs. They're very polite and very formal and they love their rituals.
I think they are one of the most polite nations on earth. You started in Tokyo. What was your first stop, Ian?
My first stop was Kanazawa, which has a lovely geisha section and a lot of historical, lovely, beautiful gardens. That's one that I'd certainly recommend.
Okay.
Anyone who's taking a rail pass and wants to see a lot of Japan quickly and very efficiently.
And how far is that from Tokyo?
It's about 2.5 hours. So,
okay.
It's a very easy ride. I mean, we had Japanese rail passes, which can only be bought in your own country. In Australia, we bought ours from Rail Plus, which
yep.
I think are a Melbourne company.
Yeah.
They're great value. We opted for Green Class, which is effectively first class, and it's a wonderful way to go.
That sounds good. I've only done that in Korea, and they have, well, they don't call it a bullet train, KTX it's called, but it goes pretty fast. And the service was terrific. The food was brought to you and the seats were incredibly comfortable, better than aircraft seats by a long shot.
That's right. I think compared to any other way of getting around Japan, the rail is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, and I suppose the 2.5 hour train ride would probably be taking you 4 or 5 hours in a car, would it?
I imagine so. I think the rail system is really geared up for high-speed travel and the Japanese do that so well.
Right.
And the stations are great and it's easy to get around. I mean, we use a lot of transport in Japan. We use the subway in Tokyo. We used even use local buses as well as the trains. So it's just comparatively simple. It's not the language isn't really a problem. The people are very polite, very helpful. So all in all, I think Japan is not a hard destination.
Yes, I think people sometimes have a misconception that because they don't use the English alphabet that it's difficult to get around, but the signs are repeated in English, aren't they?
A lot of signage is in English, and most people who have a smattering of English as well, so they'll really go out of their way to help you.
You were just able to talk with people and they spoke back to you or find somebody that can speak English, did they?
Yeah, pretty much. Even like the local bus drivers who didn't... have much English, but they at least went out of their way to help, and we really didn't find it a problem.
Right. How large is Kanazawa?
It's about, I don't know, it's not a big town. What it's famous for is its gold leaf production. I think it's the only place in Japan where they make gold leaf, and you can go to the little small factory and watch them doing it. And also one of the things there, which we did try, they they coat ice cream in gold leaf. So you can have a gold leaf ice cream.
I'm just wondering, what is there some nutritional benefit to doing that, or just an expensive ice cream?
it's about a $5 ice cream, I suppose, in Australian terms, so it's not too expensive.
Might fix your gout too, Ian.
I don't think it's real gold.
But where else did you go, you said? Kyoto.
We went to Kyoto, and one of the things that really we wanted to do was to check out the different types of accommodation in Japan, because the Olympic Games coming up in Tokyo and then in 2020, next year you've got the Rugby World Cup across Japan, and Japan offers some quite different types of accommodation. One is the traditional ryokans, so we stayed in one of those, and we also stayed in hotels just to match the to look at the difference between the two.
And what's the difference? Is it the paper walls in the ryokan?
The ryokans are really the traditional Japanese inns, but and they range from quite modest accommodation to quite high-end accommodation, and with prices to match. So you can get some really reasonably cheap accommodation, or you can pay the equivalent of what you're paying maybe in a five-star hotel in Tokyo. I think a group called Ashino Resorts operates ryokans across Japan with a brand called Kei, and that's where we stay. They also have luxury flagship properties represented by the Hoshino brand. And there's one of these properties in Bali as well. Every ryokan is different. They range, you know, as I said, they range from modest akin to guest houses to the luxury end. But what they do have is the best in, I think, Japanese hospitality.
Right.
And I think what you can expect in the modest ones, a room with very little furniture, tatami matting on the floor. The bed will be revealed at bedtime. It's tucked away somewhere out of sight in the day. And many of them have hot springs called the onsen. And this is one of the biggest reasons, I think, Japan travellers make the journey to the more rural ryokans.
Are these natural hot springs bubbling
yes,
up out of the...
Yeah, they are. They're all natural hot springs, and even those ryokans without onsen will offer a traditional bathing experience. And they come with them quite with etiquette before entering the baths. Some onsens are gender separated and some are communal. And regardless, swimsuits are not permitted.
Oh, okay. So you've got to get down to the altogether, do you?
That's right. So
okay. Not even a fig leaf.
Not even a fig leaf, no.
Oh, okay.
If for any reason it sounds unappealing to you, another option is some ryokans have private onsens, so you can bathe on your own without anyone around you.
So is it more about bathing and getting clean than maybe relaxing and or swimming?
I think it's a bit of both, really. You know, it's just a Japanese tradition that they've maintained, and they want to keep that going.
Okay. Well, that sounds like an interesting experience, Ian.
It is. It should be tried at least once.
Yeah. Well, maybe I will give that a go. I just can't think where I could do it here in Melbourne without getting arrested.
I think another feature of these ryokans is the food. And in fact, I think most ryokan stays include breakfast and what they call a kaiseki dinner, both of which typically feature a beautifully presented and colourful array of local and seasonal specialities. I think the kaiseki dinner is also a multi-course affair, served either in the privacy of your room or in many ryokans in a common dining room. Breakfasts are just as colourful, although not really your traditional Western breakfast. You'll get fish and rice and maybe miso soup, and if you're lucky, you might get an egg and some toast.
That does sound good, though. Do they serve you? Do you do the tea ceremony in your room? Is that part of the hospitality?
Yes, it is.
Well, that'd be fun. I'd enjoy that.
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, it's different from what we're used to, and as such, I think it's one of those experiences you go on holiday for.
What about the cost? How's the Aussie dollar travelling against the yen?
Well, the Aussie dollar is struggling in a few places around the world at the moment, but I don't think it's anywhere near as bad in Japan. It seemed to be on a par or slightly above what you're paying in Australia for most things. And the hotels, again, are about what you're paying in Melbourne or Sydney. We stayed with those operated by the Tokyu Group in Tokyo, Kyoto and Kanazawa. And in Tokyo, we stayed at the Capital Hotel, which was previously the Tokyo Hilton, which has got a great central location next to the Japanese Prime Minister's official residence. It's also above a subway station, so you can go straight from reception down onto a subway train and get away around Tokyo. So that was fine. It's also got a couple of very good restaurants, Star Hill, the Chinese cuisine, and one called Suren, which serves up teppanyaki and sushi and tempura. Just as a final thing, what I would say about Japan, that everywhere we went, Japanese hospitality is outstanding. People go out of their way to help. We travelled on trains, buses, as I said, the Tokyo subway, airport shuttles and taxis. And always the Japanese were gracious and keen to assist.
Fantastic. Well, you sound like you had a wonderful break, Ian, and the good thing that the earthquake only shook you up a little.
That's right. I'm still shaking a bit, but I'm okay.
All right. Well, maybe next time we chat, we can talk about Bali, because you've obviously been there most recently and can fill us in on how that's travelling now. A lot of people think Bali is just Kuta, but there's a lot more to it, and hopefully we'll get the good oil from you on that.
Yeah, love to.
Okay.
Thank you, Graham.
Thanks again, Ian.
That was Ian Jarrett, safely back in Fremantle. He spoke to Graham Kemlow earlier.